Children who lost loved ones in the September 11th attacks 2 years ago are reading the names of the dead at ceremonies this morning in New York.
Fiel Antonio Diaz.
Michael A. Diaz, Pedro III.
And our father, Benjamin Keith Clark.
Many of the families whose relatives died in the terrorist attacks are only now beginning to reach out for help, according to mental health experts. Overall, calls to the hotline run by the Mental Health Agency of New York are up 20% to 25% over last year. All this just as some of the organizations created to help are closing, NPR's Margot Adler reports.
If you want to find someone who was close to many of the families of those who died on September 11th, look no further than Chris Burke, a former bond broker at Cantor Fitzgerald, a company that lost more than 700 people in the World Trade Center. Burke lost a brother, most of his friends, and the events changed his life.
It became clear that my life as a broker and my life as a salesman was over.
Now, as the head of an organization called Tuesday's Children, Burke is calling out for help for these families. He's in an interesting position to do this because his access to the families is unparalleled. At Shea Stadium on Labor Day, hundreds of family members, people with a relative who died on 9/11, are coming to see the New York Mets. It's one of countless activities for these kids and families that Tuesday's Children puts together. Soon after the attacks, Chris Burke came to believe that many of the official organizations, from the Red Cross to Project Liberty, as well-meaning as they may have been, were falling short, and that the widows and widowers and kids of 9/11 were more willing to go to a barbecue or the beach or a ball game than fill out forms in triplicate or say they needed therapy. Geraldine Luparella, a woman in her 60s whose husband worked for ABM Maintenance and died in Tower 2, is here at Shea with a dozen children, grandchildren, and other relatives. She comes to as many events as she can.
It makes you feel just a little bit better. You don't feel alone. Not that it makes it better, but it eases the pain a little bit because the nights are long, very long.
Linda Curia has two children here at Shea. She says the first year after the event, she faced constant harassment.
I mean, I was followed to the park. If I took my kids to the park, there was pictures printed of me getting my kids off the school bus without permission.
And Burke argues that the real needs of these families were simply not being addressed.
The concerns weren't financial. The concerns swirled around their children. Some of these moms could barely get out of bed. Some of these moms were afraid to leave their houses. They couldn't go to the grocery store without running into the press.
Or well-intentioned neighbors asking too many questions. And many of the kids, says Burke, were also always in the spotlight.
However, when you got 200 of them on the beach at a ballpark, that scarlet 9/11 just gets ripped off their chest because now they're just another kid.
The kids get autographs from the Mets players and sports bags filled with stuff.
What else did you get in there, guys?
A hat.
You got a hat? What do you like? You got Outlighter and John Frank.
Big events for hundreds of kids take place monthly, and there are smaller affairs, but these events are just the beginning. In the corporate lounge of Bear Stearns, every Wednesday, Bear Stearns mentors team up with their mentees, teenagers from 9/11 families. This is one of two pilot mentoring programs. This one involves 50 teens and was created with help from Mentor, the National Mentoring Partnership. There's another program for children on Long Island. On a typical Wednesday, Hugo Sanai comes to meet with his mentor.
It's very hard to me to come here, but I like to come.
Hugo is Latino, 18. His father was a chef for a company in the World Trade Center. His mentor is Kai Olderog, a banker.
It's been, for me, really amazing to see how he's really two people in one. In his family, in many ways, he's assumed the role of a father. And I think it's been very sane that he's been able to be more of a teenager here.
You know, I put in his hand, my future in his hands, but he helped me.
He has one more year to go in high school. I think he didn't have a very clear understanding of where he wanted to go. And I really saw a danger that he would kind of get lost.
My point is to be a chef, to cook.
So I said, why don't we try to set up some appointments with some of the best chefs in the city?
And that's what they did. Kai took Hugo to meet some of the top chefs in New York, and one of them gave him an internship, Some of these chefs advised Hugo to go to business school first, something Hugo and Kai are still arguing about. Much of the mentoring is not this serious. A lot of it is about having fun with an older person outside of your family. Two Muslim sisters, Shani and Ani Khan, lost their mother in the towers, and they've spent most of their time talking about life with their mentors and seeing parts of New York City they have never seen. 13-year-old Ani Khan says of her mentor,
"She makes me feel special, like I'm supposed to feel, I hope." We went on this ride around, I think it was Central Park. That was so beautiful because we saw tons of new buildings, and we went into, I forgot what it was called, the Plaza Hotel, and it was so beautiful inside.
Joanne Gomez is a teenager who lost both her father and her uncle. They both work for Windows on the World. Wearing a black T-shirt and jeans, Gomez and her sister and her cousins made a vow to wear dark colors for 2 years in memory. Her mentor, Kathy Gilfinan, is helping her find some joy.
And we talk like about school.
We talk about boys.
And aspirations that we both have. And I want to be a clinical social worker. After what happened, a lot of social workers been helping me and therapists, so I want to do the same thing when I grow up. I used to get scared of all the sound I used to hear, but now I got to be stronger now to help my family and my mother.
But Joanne's statement about therapy is a rarity. Many 9/11 families have not accessed mental health services. Harold Koplowitz is a child psychiatrist and director of New York University's Child Study Center.
Losing a parent doesn't make you crazy. And unfortunately, the way we set up the post 9/11 interventions, you had to raise your hand and say, "I'm mentally ill, you have to give me help."
That many families have not come forward to access services makes sense to Koplowitz. First of all, many people don't recognize their symptoms. Then many people feel there's a stigma attached to asking for help.
Plus, the literature is quite clear if we look at Oklahoma. Years after the event, especially with post-traumatic stress disorder, is when the symptoms come out.
Chris Burke echoes this idea. He says it's taken 12, 16, 18 months for families to even begin to accept the programs that might make a difference.
By the time the families of 9/11 got themselves in a spot where they could begin to gain the strength to reach out and grab what's going to work for their families, a lot of it had already begun going away.
Burke also says alternative methods have often worked better than traditional therapy. So Tuesday's Children has a program for widows to begin to envision a new future for themselves. He has joined Dr. Koplowitz in helping to create a program for these kids that will get at the issues in their lives through writing and producing plays. Koplowitz says he wants to study the efficacy of these alternative methods. Burke says simply families have responded to them. When asked why, he replies,
"These types of programs deal with human beings on a human level. And at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about."
Linda Curia says therapy was important for her daughter, but now, after a year, she is resisting it as too painful. The mentoring program has filled the gap.
So for her, it's been fabulous. They matched her with this girl, Colleen. It's not a therapeutic thing. It's just like having a pal, like a big sister that you can talk about anything. She doesn't judge her. I mean, they love each other.
2 years down the road, Burke says much of the world may have moved on, but some of these families are hurting more than ever. In the past, in a different world, he says, the community would have been there for these families and done what he's done. The fact that they haven't, he says, is an additional tragedy. Margot Adler, NPR News, New York.